हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 2. So then, Table of Contents, chapter 22, Krishna steals the garments of the unmarried gopis. 23, the Brahmin's wives blessed. Chapter 24, worshipping Govardhan Hill. Chapter 25, Lord Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill. 26, wonderful Krishna. 27, Lord Indra and Mother Surabhi offer prayers. 28, Krishna rescues Nandamars from the abode of Varuna. Preface. Srila Jiva Goswami explains in his Lagu Vaishnava Toshini 10.24.1 that Srila Sugadev Goswami presented these Kishore pastimes out of chronological order because in his ecstasy the transitions between the pastimes reminded him of other pastimes. For example, giving descriptions of the seasons in Vrindavan in chronological order, though they occurred in different years. Or presented pastimes of a similar subject matter together like the pastime of the Yajna Brahmas and then the Indra Yajna that was diverted to the Govardhan Yajna. Thus, Srila Jiva Goswami provides the following chronological order for Krishna's Kishore pastimes. Worship of Govardhan, autumn, going to Varuna's place, stealing the gopis' clothes, winter, begging food from the Brahmin's wives, summer, and the Rasa Leela, the next autumn. According to the general divisions of growth, the Kumara age lasts until the age of 5. Pauganda up to the age of 10, and Kishore to age 15. From then on, one is known as Yogana. It is seen from the various pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam, however, that Sri Krishna matured quicker than this, but then remained at the stage on the cusp of the Kishore age and the Yovana age for the duration of his earthly pastimes as described below. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti writes in the Sardartha Darshani 10.45.3, the 3 years and 4 months that Lord Krishna stayed in Mahavan were the equivalent of 5 years for an ordinary child. Right, so the Mahapurushas, their life, then they function at 1.5 times the age. Does that make sense? So that means this, what did we just say? 3 years, 4 months. So if you take half of that, that would be 4.5 years. And 4 months would equal 6 months, so that would be 5 years. You understand?
6 years.
Huh?
6 years.
Oh, 6 years, yeah. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. So Krishna does the Kumara pastimes that would happen for 5 years in 3 years and 4 months. Right? Does that make sense? So everything is always then that proportion. The period from then to the age of 6 years, 8 months, during which he lived in Vrindavan, constitutes his Pauganda stage. Right, because then that would be 9, 9, and 8, then be 12, so it'd be 10, 10, right? During which he lived in Vrindavan, constitutes his Pauganda stage, and the period from the age of 6 years and 8 months through his 10th year, during which time he lived in Nandishwara, Nandagram, constitutes his Kishore stage. Then at the age of 10 years and 7 months, on the 11th lunar day of the dark fortnight of the month of Chaitra. He went to Mathura, and on the 14th day thereafter he killed Kamsa. Thus he completed his Kaishor period at age 10, and he eternally remains at that age. In other words, we should understand that from this point on, the Lord remains forever a Kaishora. It's just on the edge of being Yogala. It means he's just turned, but it's not like he moves into that. So when we say 16, it just means when you just turn 16. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes? Okay. So we see is that then he's performing 6 years, 8 months. So he's performing the Rasa Lila pastimes basically when he's 7 years old. Right? But it's equivalent to the Kaishora age because he's in Kaishora at that time. But for everyone else, they'd still be in Pauganda. Yes? Good. That way also, then Prabhupada points out in the Krishna book, by doing the Rasa Lila at 7, no one can complain that there's lust. Well, if it's done at Kaishora, they could say there's lust. Right? But it is Kaishora for him. But for everybody else, he's only 7. Chapter 22. Krishna steals the garments of the unmarried gopis. Pratigya. Activities in devotional service to Krishna are transcendental to any fruitive result. Adhyaya Prakashita. Having described the pastimes in the monsoon and autumn seasons, Sukadeva now describes, following the order of time, the pastimes in Hemanta season till the end of the chapter. Vaishnava Toshani of Srila Sanatana Goswami. So, Hemanta is the first part of winter. It's not the coldest part. It's the fog part. So technically now, for here, we've gone into Hemanta. Right? So then when we'll see, the mornings have that little bit of fog and all that. You know, see there, the fog. Mm-hmm. So it has that little bit of cold. Days are pleasant, and then after 2 months of that, then it goes into the seat where it's just cold. You know, spring will start a little bit during that, during the Vasant Panchami, but it'll be then at the Nityananda Trayodasi. Then that, from after that, then it's actually spring if you're going by the months. So always everything in the astrological then has overlaps. So that way it keeps things interesting. Yes?
It appears that extra season between winter and spring. So we're not sure which one is that.
No.
It says six seasons.
Yes.
But where's the sixth one?
Means basically you can look at it, there's two that are cold, two that are wet, and two that are hot. Does that make sense?
It seems too cold and everything else is hot and wet.
No, that's what I said, too cold. Too cold, too hot, too wet. So, the two wet are rainy season and autumn. Because in autumn, it doesn't rain very often, but when it does, it rains really heavy. Like you saw those days just before the rain stopped. It was probably the heaviest rain in the season. You can get the floods at that time because it rains so much. You get, you can get 2, 3, 4 inches of water in one rain, out in the fields there. Now you don't notice it as much, but before you could see it. So you have two there, that's the wet. Then the cold, then you have Hemanta and the seat, which just means it's the mist season and then the actual cold season. Right? Then you have the two that are hot, that's the spring and summer. Does that make sense?
There's mention of a dry season, but I can't understand where's the dry season.
The dry season is the summer. The summer means the April, for here it's April, May, mid-April to mid-June. It moves back and forth because of the moon. In Vrindavan it'll be through July. Everything here is like a month shifted off, like 3 weeks to a month off. because it's farther east, but there that seems to be where the seasons fall exactly. So the summer, you can get storms, but it's known as the dry season, because it can also not storm so much. You see, some seasons it just goes through, hardly ever rains, and other ones, and it's constantly a storm every few days. So everything becomes quite dry. Then the rains will come. So here the monsoon comes earlier. And then there it'll come in, you know, when Chaturmas starts. So the general thing is Chaturmas, the first 2 months, are the rainy season. And the last two, then those are the fall season. But here you already get, Kartik already has that flavor of Hemanta generally. This year it's so early because the Purushottam month will be there. So then sometimes the rains, the autumn continues into. But as it moves forward, then it goes the other way. It goes out. So,
Maharaj, Purushottam month is extended autumn?
Purushottam month can come in 4 different months where it extends. So there's certain ones that seems to fall in generally, and then there's ones that it falls in rarely. So on specific one, that's when they do the Navakaleva in Puri.
Yeah.
They change the deity. So generally that happens every 12 years, but I think this last time it was after much longer, 18 or something years. It was much, much more extended. So it's on. It's when it falls, by the calculation, then it falls in. It falls in 4 different months. So we're generally more used to seeing it, yeah, like that in either rainy season or fall, like this. But it also falls at other times. Like that. But they're more rare. Okay. This chapter describes the worship of Katyayani, the stealing of the gopis' clothing, Krishna's conversation with the gopis, and Krishna fulfilling the wishes of the gopis, as well as as well as Krishna praising the trees. After describing the attraction of the married gopis, such as Radha to Krishna, in the autumn season, there's the description of the unmarried Nityasiddha gopis, such as Danya, who are absorbed in talk of Krishna. According to local custom, they perform the Katyayani Vrata during the Hemanta season in order to obtain Krishna as their husband, Sarvartha Darshini. So that means it's just during this season. It's cold and not totally freezing cold. Otherwise the pastime wouldn't go so well. It's just enough that you are once uncomfortable, but not so much that it's actually drastic. Summary of verses 1 to 7. The Katyayani Vrata. 8 to 28, Krishna steals the gopis' clothes. 29 to 38, Krishna glorifies the trees of Braja. Sukadeva Goswami said, during the first month of the winter season, right, so all 4 months will be called the winter season. But you have Hemanta and Seet, right? So the hot season will be spring and summer. And then the wet season will be rains and autumn. So since it's not a very well known method, because in the West then you have cold and then one day that's not cold, you know, it's like in England, you know, I think it was last year summer happened on a Wednesday or something like that. Yeah, you probably get the same in your place. Yeah, you miss that. Remember, right? Where we were in Oregon, that it was basically it just rains there. You know, here you get the solid gray cloud, it's not distinguishable. And those are the ones that actually produce the most long just kind of rain. The big puffy ones that are black, they roll in rain and go away. But the gray ones just stay there. I think New Zealand has kind of like the same thing. It's famous for, I think they call it the long cloud or something. It just doesn't end. So you get rain there like 9 months straight. But there's 2 weeks where in February, so it's still freezing cold, where it stops raining and the sun comes out. And the amazing thing, even though it's freezing cold, everyone's out in their shorts, t-shirts, sunglasses, going out on picnics, you know, they're all having a great time, yeah. So, yeah, so in the West you can't really distinguish seasons necessarily so well. You know. Verses 1 to 7, the Katyayini Vrata. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami said, during the first month of the winter season, the young unmarried gopis of girls of Gokula observed the vow of worshipping goddess Katyayani. For the entire month, they ate only unspiced khichdi. My dear king, after they had bathed in the water of the Jamuna, just as the sun was rising, the gopis made an earthen deity of goddess Durga on the riverbank. Then they worshipped her with such aromatic substances as sandalwood pulp, along with other items, both opulent and simple, including lamps, fruits, betel nuts, newly grown leaves, and fragrant garlands and incense. And so what you do is just like, you know, sometimes you see that on the beach, people will take the sand and make it into, like, it looks like a relief, like, so it's like a half body. So that's the Vedic system, is people go down to, like this, the riverbank or that, where there's sand or at the ocean, and then they would make deities and then do the worship. Remember Chutananda Maharaj was once talking about that was then how the Shudras did deity worship, because they would make that kind of deity. And I'm not sure that you don't make it far enough down, at least in the ocean, when they're doing that, when you finish, it's within the area where the ocean will come up and the deity will go. So you don't make it farther up, because then people will step on it and this and that. You have to remember that, you know, the mentality. They don't have that Dominical mentality. So they would build there. Plus, it's also more moist, so then you can make the shape. They would do all their worship. And in here, then also it says, aromatic substances such as sandalwood pulp. Sandalwood pulp is considered the aromatic substance. Then you change, you make variety in it by what you add into it. Does that make sense? So the basis is always sandalwood. Then you may put saffron, you may put camphor, you may put musk. You know, different ways you can put it together. Does that make sense? Yeah. Each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship while chanting the following mantra. O goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Nandamaraj my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. According to Vedic civilization, unmarried girls from 10 to 14 years of age are supposed to worship either Lord Shiva or goddess Durga in order to get a nice husband. But the unmarried girls of Braja were already attracted by the beauty of Krishna. They were, however, engaged in the worship of goddess Durga in the beginning of the Hemanta season, just prior to the winter season. The first month of Hemanta is Agrayana, October-November, and at that time all the unmarried gopis of Vrindavan began to worship goddess Durga with a vow. Yeah, so this October-November, Hemanta, Agrayana. They first ate havishana, a kind of food prepared by boiling together mung dal and rice without any spices or turmeric. According to Vedic injunction, this kind of food is recommended to purify the body. Therefore, one enacts a ritualistic ceremony. Sorry, we're smiling because the BBT purport uses part of this in theirs to explain. But they somehow or another, because they don't understand the six seasons, they shifted Hemanta to, they said Mriga Shirsha. When it's actually here, it says it's Agrayana. Because it's early. It's Mriga Shirsha is actually in seat in the cold. Yes. Yes, when it's really cold. What we call here Mag. It's the coldest month.
Is that this happens straight up, you know, next day after party ends?
It seems to. Yes, so therefore it's Hemanta, like that. But somehow or another in the purport yesterday they mentioned Mriga Shirsha, which is, no, it's Agrayana. Because it's not really well understood, the six seasons. I've even talked to Indians who come from different states, like an Ayurvedic doctor from Kerala. They don't understand the six seasons at all, because it's either hot or it rains, like that, you know. And it rains twice. There's two rainy seasons, they get, so. But you can distinguish, they're just not used to it. It means anywhere you can distinguish it. It's just that, you know, it's not necessarily so prominent. And the, how you say, the lakshanas of it are not necessarily as nice as one would be pleased with.
Actually, Mrugashira Mahat is after Kartika. Magh is 2 months later.
Oh,
Agrahayana and Mrugashira have the same name, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay. Then it's good.
Because the names of the months are different in different places in India also.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay. So Agrahayana is where?
Same month.
No, but where?
After Kartik next.
Which place?
Mostly Bengal. I don't remember.
Okay, Mrigashirsha is what they'll call it on.
South they call it Mrigashirsha.
Okay. Okay, good. Okay, so then that solves the problem. The Prabhupada used the term Agrayan. Okay.
According
to Vedic injunction, this kind of food is recommended to purify the body before one enacts a ritualistic ceremony. All the unmarried gopis in Vrindavan used to daily worship goddess Katyayani early in the morning after taking a bath in the river Jamuna. Katyayani is another name for goddess Durga. The goddess is worshipped by preparing a doll made of sand from the bank of the Jamuna. It is recommended in the Vedic scriptures that a deity be made from different kinds of material elements. It can be painted, made of metal, made of jewels, made of wood, earth, or stone, or can be conceived within the heart of the worshipper. Footnote 1. The deity form of the Lord is said to appear in 8 varieties: stone, wood, metal, earth, paint, sand, the mind, or jewels. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:17-12. The Mayavadi philosophers take all these forms of the deity to be imaginary, but actually they are accepted in the Vedic scriptures to be identical with either the Supreme Lord or a respective demigod. Because you're dealing on the material plane. Krishna's created all these different elements, and that's what we get to work with. So we're going to be conscious, then we have to have mind, intelligence, senses, a body. In other words, to function as an individual, because that's the way it is in the spiritual world. But because we're dealing with material, then you can't conceive of the spiritual. But through the bona fide methods, then one can, if you follow those methods, because Krishna will reveal himself through these methods. Right? But it also requires the proper attitude. So if one has a material concept of the deity, then the deity will manifest in a material way, and you'll only get material benefit. But if you come into contact with devotional service, then through that devotion, then you're able to perceive Krishna spiritually. So the whole point is it depends on, one, you use the bona fide method, and two, that you use, that you have the proper devotional attitude. Yes?
We see in the spiritual world there is a concept of deity worship.
Yes.
Is it the same concept that we have here?
Yes, the same method. It's the same method. Now, whether they're using more of a tantric, more of a Vedic, or more of a pancharatric, that I don't know exactly what they're using. Pancharatra is standard what we use, like that, because it's a mix of both. So, and we see like the yogic Brahmins, they'd be using just Vedic. But like what Nanda Baba does in his house, worshipping his deity of Nrisingadev, that I'm not sure.
And the gopis worship Surya there?
Yes, then they would do. So it would be probably according to whatever thing would be there. Generally, I've seen the tendency is more towards Vedic in a Braj, because then it takes it more away from, there's more of a difference. You know, Vaikuntha, I think it's more the pancharatric, otherwise why would Ramanuja, Madhva, and them, you know, make the emphasis on that? But I've noticed that the acharyas, when it comes down to something that's older, you know, I mean, or let's say that is more Vedic as opposed to pancharatric, sometimes, generally they take the Vedic instead of the pancharatric. Not always, but just as it seems to be more of a tendency. Does that make sense? But all the basic rituals are all the same. It's just a matter of what kind of mantras they use. So if they use the Vedic mantras exclusively, then that will be Vaikanas and those kind of systems. If it uses Vedic and Tantric, then it will be Pancharatric. If it just uses Tantric, it'll be Tantra. So like we use the Satvata Tantras, which means they're kind of Pancharatra. But there'll be a little bit more on the Tantric side, which means shorter mantras, mula mantras, bead syllables, like that. More, more mudras and like that. So you see, it seems to be more mudras, and things like that. So it comes out to be a very nice system of worship. So that seems to be preferred there. Vaikuntha will be a little bit more formal. The tantras tends to be a little bit more informal. Like so, Sukadeva Goswami continued, each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship while chanting the following mantra. O goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Nanda Maharaj my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. Footnote 2. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 4 to Bhagavat Arkamrichimala, chapter 6, entitled Tasting the Sublime Nature of Relationships with the Lord, Bhagavat Rasa Tattva, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. Right, so then, the nature of relationship with Krishna, seeing things in relationship to Him, trying to establish a relationship with Him, then that taste then is very special. So as we see here is that the gopis are tasting that. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the unmarried gopis used to prepare the deity of Goddess Durga and worship it with chandan pulp, garlands, incense, lamps, and all kinds of presentations, fruits, grains, and twigs of plants. After worshipping, it is the custom to pray for some benediction. The unmarried girls used to pray with great devotion to Goddess Katyayani, addressing her as follows. Right? So one may say, well, why isn't it just done unmotivated? Because in the material world, the reason we're here is because we're motivated. So then the Vedic system is that you start to regulate or control that motivation by connecting it to authority, by connecting it to a higher position. So the demigods, actually all their potencies are Krishna, as we understand from the explanation in Vedanta Sutra and Chandogya Upanishad, that the demigod that they're worshipping is actually Krishna, because he's the potency behind it. Right? It's not that they are the ones that actually give, just like the minister is there, but he can't do anything without the prime minister. But you approach them, they do the work, but it's still only under the direction of the prime minister. So technically they're representing the prime minister. So like that, then they are there. So in this way you're worshiping Krishna, but because you have material desire, it's not seen like that, but you're regulating your life, you're doing according to the different things. The greater thing that you want, generally the greater the difficulty in trying to obtain it. You know, the more technical the ritual is, so you have to put in more attention, more devotion. Right? But then always then there's the benediction. So that's why it's all done, is to get that benediction. So devotional service then means we're doing all these things without the desire for the benediction. We just want to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
We've noticed that certain Matajis, travel around and give seminars on how to develop feminine qualities and worship Durga Devi. Is that a good practice for us?
It wouldn't be our tradition so much. You know, I mean, it's here we see in Braj they do, but it hasn't been a major thing. Like you see, Prabhupada put no emphasis on Katyayani Vrata or anything like that. It's just a tradition that they do, but for us, even you wanted to do, means by worshipping Radha and Krishna, you already have the origin of, because they're worshipping Yogamaya. Yogamaya is the Sarup Shakti. So that's the Sarup Shakti in the aspect of relationship. Right? It means in the Jnana Shakti and Kriya Shaktis. And Radharani is the Sarup Shakti, where she's taking care of the Hladini. So since Hladini is about Krishna's desire, that's actually the highest position. And so then if you're worshipping Radha and Krishna, then, or Lord Chaitanya, you're already getting that benefit. But the point is, we want to be nice devotees, and then in that, then we develop the, you know, proper character that's there. So it's part of the training. So if the parents understand, then when they train and all that, then it will naturally develop. So it's constant discussion and pointing out. Like I mentioned, I remember seeing high-grade South Indian Brahmins. Then they were with their daughter. Then when they're talking, anything that was wrong was just not chaste. Because chastity meant that it was proper behavior. Right? It's much greater. You can't be chaste unless you behave properly. Does that make sense? So they go together. So from when they would be talking, then anything went wrong, it would be discussing like that. So like from 2-3 years old, then that was how it was expressed. And so then that becomes very solid. So then from 2, then by the time you get to 12 and you kind of understand the subtler points of, material desire, it's been 10 years of it's based on good qualities, proper behavior, proper attitude. And so then you just add this onto that. Does that make sense? So you're appendaging the sensual desire onto proper behavior. Rather than when sensual desire comes up, then we try to explain what's chastity and how you should behave nicely. That's a bit late. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the idea is that by that association, then these things get nicely done. And so then here, then they pray to Krishna. They can pray to, we can, because Lord Shiva is the Sada Shiva, like that. But also if you're worshipping Panchatattva, that's already a Dvaitacharya. Right? You're dealing with Giradhar, you're already dealing with the Sarup Shakti. So in our worship that we're doing, it's already being taken care of. Because for us, dealing with the culture is enough to make the time spent here go well. But it's not about developing here, though it can. As the devotional service is developed, then it has a meaning. But if you just develop the material facilities without Krishna, it doesn't have much meaning. Right? So trying to focus on that pure devotional service is the main thing. Then you add on to it these aspects, then it works. But if we think these things will make devotional service go nice, then we've missed the point. The Gita points that out, as you're engaging in religion means you don't follow irreligion, you follow religion, and religion you connect to Krishna, but the actual position is devotional service is the actual thing, and we just use religion as a medium to express it. So one's trying to get to that uttama position. Does that make sense? Because we see here is that these gopis, they're worshipping of Durga, they're worshipping Yoga Maya, not Mahamaya. Because the point is, you know, you don't want to get too involved here. Does that make sense? Because it's either, you know, how you say that the modern mentality has that tendency towards extremes. You know, so it's totally unnecessary or not necessary at all. It's one of those things. It's not a problem, but it's not actually a major aspect. The major aspect is the training, not the worship of Durga. Does that make sense? Let's see. The unmarried gopis used to pray with great devotion to goddess Katyayani, addressing her as follows. Addressing her as follows. O supreme external energy of the personality of Godhead, O supreme mystic power, O supreme controller of this material world, O goddess, please be kind to us and arrange for our marriage with the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna. The Vaishnavas generally do not worship any demigods. Srila Narottam Das Thakur, that's what they say, we generally don't. Yoga Maya, like in Govindaji temple, then you have those two side kind of temples that are connected. You get to them, you can take darshan from outside the temple, but you get to them from inside the deity room. Means you have the front room, and then you have the actual deity room. Like Nisringadeva, there's that front room, and then there's the deity room. So in Govindaji, that front room then has hallways going off to the two side temples. So then one of them is Yogamaya. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has strictly forbidden all worship of the demigods for anyone who wants to advance in pure devotional service. Yet the gopis, who are beyond compare in their affection for Krishna, were seen to worship Durga. The goddess, the worshippers of demigods sometimes mention that the gopis worship goddess Durga, but we must understand the purpose of the gopis. Generally, people worship goddess Durga for some material benediction. Here the gopis prayed to the goddess to become wives of Lord Krishna. So if you're trying to become wives of Lord Krishna, then you could do it. But otherwise we avoid, right? The purport is that if Krishna is the center of activity, a devotee can adopt any means to achieve the goal. So it wouldn't be that you were just worshipping Durga to become a nice girl to get a nice husband and that's it. We wouldn't bother with that. The gopis could adopt any means to satisfy Krishna. That was the super excellent characteristic of the gopis. They worship goddess Durga completely for 1 month in order to have Krishna as their husband. Every day they prayed for Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, to become their husband. Footnote 3. In this regard, the acharyas point out that the gopis were worshipping Yogamaya, not Mahamaya. The distinction between these two potencies of the Lord was discussed in detail in chapter 3 of this canto. Right, so then with... means Yogamaya is the position, and only if you see things not connected to Krishna, she's Mahamaya. So we never worship demigods, right? So then we wouldn't worship Mahamaya. That means we would only see everybody in connection with Krishna. And that way, then, the demigods are respected, and that kind of aspect is there. But if you're seeing it from that point, then why stop there? Why not take it and keep going until you get to the Vrindavan? So, yeah. Yes.
One of the verse directly mentions Mahamaya. Why is not Yogamaya? And then we have to get a purport to understand. Actually, not Mahamaya, is Yogamaya.
So but who's the greatest Maya?
Yogamaya.
Yeah.
Oh.
Means that, see, we get used to words being used in one way, but they have, depending on the context, they have many meanings. Because that was the thing here, is that what they were saying, is that, what do you call it? O supreme external energy of the personality, O supreme mystic power, or supreme controller of this material world. But who is actually the supreme energy is Yogamaya. Does that make sense? Because you have the material energy, but how is she functioning because of Yogamaya? Because technically it's the same person. So because they want Krishna as their husband, they're worshipping Yogamaya. Right? By their tradition, they may be doing these things, but it's only... how else are they going to get an opportunity to meet Krishna? Right? Where do you do this worship of Katyayani? Do you do it in your home, in your bedroom? You know, you have your little cabinet and you open the doors and inside you do your little worship. Yeah, you go down to the bank of the Jamuna. So, are their parents there? No. Okay. So then Krishna can come. When they go and worship Suryadev, where is the temple? It's in their house? Yeah, it's out in the forest. So therefore, Krishna can come. Right? And these are small things. Is anybody else going to be there? They go down to take their bath, do their worship. No one else will be there. Surya Temple, you've seen these little dinky temples. There's, you know, the temple and maybe the pujari is there. Sometimes not. Nobody's there. So then Krishna can come. He can be the pujari. He can do all these different things. Well, if you have this big Vaikuntha temple that's, you know, filled with tons of people, how can Krishna and the gopis interact? So it just is a position for them to interact. Does that make sense? But it follows the culture. The point is you're going to interact, so there'd be a standard for doing that. There's a culture. Following that culture, then one is able to express these things very nicely. Right? They speak in Sanskrit, or in Braj, then you can, or the you can get such subtleties that you can't in other languages, right? The dress then works perfectly for it. All the different offerings that they make, everything is all the best quality. So that's the whole point of the Vedic culture, is that the best quality of worship of Krishna and the best quality of lifestyle for the devotees is there. That's the whole idea. Since the devotee wants the best for Krishna and Krishna wants the best for the devotee, then the Vedic system is being given as the best. Other things fall short, you know, especially shorts. They fall quite short, right? In fact, most places that gentlemen go to, you cannot go with shorts. Right? Does that make sense? So shorts and gentlemen, you don't say in the same sentence unless you're playing tennis or you're actually on the beach. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The gopis pray. Oh, boy. Yeah, it's better when they just bring the big truck. I guess it's easier with these things. But they have to bring so often. The gopis pray. Oh, Katyayani, make the son of Nandagopa our husband. Katyayani replies, but why are you making this request to me independently? I can only do this by inspiring your parents to do it. Through them I can do this. Fearing this response, they say in anxiety, oh, great yogini, you yourself must unite us with Krishna without the obstacles caused by parents' interference. Being so eager, we cannot bear any delay. Because Krishna has not yet got his Upanayana thread, he is not yet suitable for marriage. Therefore, without the formal wedding, but in the Gandharva style, let us marry him. O Adishwari, you have all powers. Nothing is impossible for you. Katyayani replies, right, because the boy means in your breeds of families until they have Upanayanam, then they don't get married. Yes.
So does it apply to ISKCON before first initiation? You're not supposed to marry.
I would say is earlier you could say that because the difference between joining and for initiation was 6 months, but now in some yatras it's like 10 years, and that's kind of late. There were some gurus who was already 10 years, 20 years ago. You know, so I'm not sure what their standard is now. You know, like that. Yes, at the ash immersion ceremony, then the mantras will be chanted. Yes. Okay. Yeah, so that would be the standard. Because you would go to Gurukul, and then in Gurukul, then after your studies, then you're considered, you know, adult, and then you would get married. So it'd be just natural that it would be there, you know. But for Krishna, then it's, you know, more fun because that's formal. So he'll do all that stuff in Mathura. So that will happen later. Katyayani replies, "If you want to marry Krishna without your parents knowing, how are you going to carry out married life together with him?" Yeah, he's the pizza delivery guy. Or you know, he's like, you eat a lot of pizza every time I come over. This guy's here. Yeah. The gopis respond, "Oh, Mahamaya, supreme bewilderer, you should bewilder our parents so they do not think of marrying us with anybody else and so that they do not know of our association with Krishna. O Devi, one who carries out pastimes or helps engage us in the Lord's pastimes."
Maharaj, you missed a footnote.
I missed a footnote.
Oh, Mahamaya,
okay. Although the gopis are dealing with her as Yogamaya, they request her to act as Mahamaya in order to bewilder their parents. Okay, so there's your Mahamaya recipe. "You should bewilder our parents so they do not think of marrying us with anyone else, and so that they do not know of our association with Krishna. O Devi, one who carries out pastimes or helps engage us in the Lord's pastimes. Make the son of Nanda our husband and no one else. Thus, even if we marry someone else, there is no harm. Because the point is they're only married with Krishna on that principle of the Gandharva. That's what it means, just by association. You know, by that common agreement. So that way then no one else knows about it. So do we catch what's happening here? It remains as parakia. So that's why then if they're married to someone else, just that no one should know, they should have that relationship with Krishna and no one else should know about it. Does that make sense? So that's the important element. That keeps it at parakia. Because otherwise, if you worship with the idea of Krishna becoming the husband, then that's not, you won't end up in Braj, you'll end up in Dwarka. So one wants to be careful of that. That's why for us, Katyayani Vrata is not so important. Right? So because they have to worship to get a husband, they want Krishna as their husband. And then Yoga Maya should then cover everything so no one knows that Krishna is their husband. And at the same time is that if she arranges for them to marry someone else, that's fine as long as it doesn't interfere with their seeing Krishna as their husband. Does that make sense? So, yes. So that's why for us, the pastime is wonderful, but as a vrata, it's not actually a major one for us. Srila Sanatana Goswami reveals, according to Padma Purana, in a previous birth, these girls had been sages during the time of Rama. In Braja, desiring Krishna, they worshipped using this mantra. Not using any other mantra, they showed their devotion to Krishna. So it's just focused only on that aspect. So it appears that these were the sages at Dandakaran. Sugadeva, so it's a different group than Radharani's group. Like that, because they were already married, as I mentioned before in the introduction, that Radharani and the others, they're already married. So these are the ones that are younger, the unmarried. So he said, headed by Dunya. Dunya is the head of the gopis that are the younger ones. Right? Radharani is the head of those that are in the middle, right? In the Kaishor age. And then the competition is the head of the gopis in the Yovana age. Right? So they're like 18 years old. So they're much more full and more, you know, how you say, boldly feminine, and their actions are more bold. But at the same time, as they have that aspect of, I belong to Krishna, or Radharani is, and there's others in all the ages, but there's that specifically. And then Radharani, and then their group, then they're that one that's in between. They still have that young, you know, that younger aspect, but they also have that, you know, maturity. So it's the mix that's in between. Does it make sense? So it's that middle that's the appropriate one, the best one. So Radharani, there's those who are more aggressive, those who are not aggressive. And so Radharani's in the middle. She can be both aggressive or non-aggressive. Does that make sense? So in all these things where you have three levels, that it's about these various, you know, qualities and all that, you know, behavior, then Radharani will always be in the middle. She'll be in the middle of them and then the middle of that. But when it comes to the highest levels of attraction to Krishna, attachment to Krishna, love for Krishna, intensity of emotion, she's always on the top. She's not in the middle of that one. Does that make sense? Because her being in the middle by her characteristics is the topmost. And the other two are just to give the flavors on the two sides. Because the one thing's nice because there's other things. I have a main prep. Right? It means, how you say, you have a main preparation. Now, it's nice on its own. You could just eat it on its own, and it would be good. But now if you add other side preparations to it, then it enhances it, and it makes it stand out as the main prep. You understand? Because there's something to compare it to. Does that make sense? So therefore, the gopis of that younger group, the Dunya's group and the other group, then those two, then Radharani stands out. But the two are there. Does that make sense? So it's about taste. So when there's sambhog, that makes Vipalamba stand out. When there's Vipalamba, that makes sambhog stand out. So it's just a matter of... Does that make sense? Yeah. It means You eat salty, right? Then you really appreciate sweet. But if you eat too much sweet, then you eat a little salty, and then you can appreciate sweet again. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a South Indian Brahmin tradition that when they're eating the sweets, they keep some achar or something on the side. So when they can't taste the sweet anymore, then they eat some of that, so it brings back the flavor, and then they eat more sweet. See? It just goes back and forth. Yes? We won't get into too much detail. I'd say it's a more confidential South Indian pastime.
If they come, my parents come over here, they feel they are lost their life because they can't find, in Bengali food, they can't find the spices also.
Well, it depends upon who's cooking. Like that.
Generally, even if I take Mahaprasad also.
Then you just have, it's like in Puri, they offer it simple to Krishna, yeah. And then they put a chance on it, otherwise no one will eat it. Yeah, you just give them the Mahaprasad along with some. What state are you from?
Andhra Pradesh.
Okay, yeah. No, you're not going to get, even in the villages, it'll be close. But one time I remember sitting down with the group. It was because in the 70s, and the whole group of devotees joined. They were originally from Bangladesh, because this was just shortly after the Bangladesh war, because I think that was 71. So many came over. So at that time, they were still kind of more their own. They hadn't been, now it's a little bit more kind of integrated. But at that time, they were very Bangladeshi. And so then they, because, you know, they're good at all these cultural things and all that. And so they would, most of them, they'd be involved in running the kitchen that would, you know, cook for, you know, the devotees and cook for that. And devotees at that time meant they weren't very many Westerners. So one day, we happened to be late and all that and something, so we came, and it was at a time when it was when now all the devotees have taken prasad, everybody's like that, so now just the cooks and the kitchen in charge are taking prasad. So then they sat down, you know, standard big pile of rice, which for Andrans is not a problem, and then very thin dal, right, that, because it's just to make it wet so it's not dry, and then they gave me this little ball of potato, mashed potato. You know, literally, it was a little dinky ball, like the size of a Ferrero Rocher, like that big. And I'm thinking, what's that? You know, that's the subji. I'm thinking, why that? And I think they had that, and I'm not sure that they didn't have some green chilies also, so I didn't take the green chili. And then you take a mouthful of the rice and dal, and then they just take a little bit of the potato. And then you take a little bit of the potato, and it's basically just potato and chili powder, you know, just all, or you know, fried chili, whatever. It's just chili. It's just an excuse for chili, you know, because you know how you eat the dried chili, so you have to put them in something, right? Like that. So it was hot, and they're going, means it's burning their mouth, and they go, oh, such good taste. And I'm just thinking, it's hot. It's like, why are you doing that? But, like I was saying, that was hot, but it didn't compare to once we went to, what is his name? Pananishinga. Vijayawada. The deity there. And we were just traveling, two of us, so then we stayed at the temple. They had some little place for people to stay, and they asked if you want something to eat, and he says yes. So then they made some, I think it's called pulihara, tamarind rice. So 1 kilo of rice, you know, cooked for the two of us. And, you know, you sit down, and you know, they brought the bowl, just gave it to us, and then we sat down and started eating. So we just put it on the plate, and then we're eating. And then we notice that there's these very big red chilies. Very big. Not the small little dinky ones that we get. Monster ones. But not the Bombay ones. I mean the hot monster ones. And they're fried black. Like that. So here there was a thing, as you mentioned, that it was a common thing in Bengal. They would fry chilies till they're really black to eat with the meal. You know, it's for flavor. and because they're not as hot that way, but all the heat goes into the oil. So then when you do that, you put it, you just eat the chilies, not the oil. So you get the flavor, a little bit of heat, but not too much. So we, you know, we're eating that. We figure, oh, these are, and somehow or another, I don't know why, the name for them was called sharks. I'm not sure why. Maybe because they were there floating around and stuff, and they would bite you. I'm not sure. I'm not why they were called sharks. I have no idea. But whatever. So we thought they were sharks. So yeah, we started eating them along on the way. Yeah, like this. And then we start. No, it's a little hot. And we're getting more than we can eat. So we just start piling them up on the side. And as we're eating, when we finished eating that 1 kilo of rice, that there were 50 chilies. And so technically they may have been sharks, but what we weren't counting on is that the oil they fried in went into the rice. That was the chance. And then afterwards we went out to the there was a well, and so then we go to wash our hands, so you pour water for each other, and there was a couple of buckets, so then we were getting water and that, and then spontaneously, without, there was no discussion, it just happened that we were so hot from eating all the chili that we're pouring water for each other's hand. The next thing, we're just pouring water over each other's heads. We're fully dressed, right? And then we went back into the room, laid down like that, clothes wet, It didn't change. And after, waking up sometime later, after like 3 hours, the ends of your fingers were still throbbing from the chili. And, we're novices because the Andrans would have eaten that with a side, the dry red chilies, but without cooking them. Because when you cook them, they get less hot themselves. But you just, as they are, you grind them on the stone and make a paste. And that's mixed with, some oil, some salt, like this. And so you're already cooking hot. And you put that in your mouth, and then you take a little bit of that to give the flavor. Achar, yes. So, yes. So if an Andran says it's not hot enough here, they mean it. But those Bangladeshis, they would have probably been happy with that. It would have been okay. It's like without the achar on the side, but But the funny thing is, according to Ayurveda, because they always eat like that, it doesn't actually have a detrimental effect.
Otherwise they would be dead.
Yeah, they would be.
Curd also. And then curd.
Yeah.
That's their antibiotic. Because, it burns everything?
Maybe. It could be. But the thing is for everybody else, you can eat hotter or less hot according to season. But because that's how they always eat, they don't have to follow that aspect of seasonal. Like, you have to follow the seasonal rules of diet, but if there's something you always eat, like Bengalis always eat mustard oil. So they don't have to follow the seasonal, that different seasons you wouldn't use mustard oil. Because they always eat it. So if someone's always eating something, then that, that's like, it's like, what do you call it, Italians and pasta or something. It doesn't, even if it's not the season for it, they eat it, it doesn't bother them. So change the sauces, like that. But then you have Americans eating pasta, it's only tomato sauce, so that's what they always eat, it works. Okay. Thus, Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus for an entire month the girls carried out their vow and properly worshipped the goddess Bhadrakali, fully absorbing their minds in Krishna and meditating upon the following thought: may the son of King Nanda become my husband. Each day they rose at dawn, calling out to one another by name. They all held hands and loudly sang the glories of Krishna while going to the Kalindi to take their bath. One day, so these are the younger ones. So then to go together, holding hands and that would be very standard. when you're the older group, like Radharani, they might not, or they might put their arm around each other's waist, or like this. But they wouldn't just, hold hands and sing and, probably skip and do that. That'll be that touch younger. Okay. They all held hands and loudly sang the glories of Krishna while going to the Kalindi to take their bath. One day they came to the riverbank and, putting aside their clothing as they had done before, happily played in the water while singing the glories of Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti reveals. Kadachit here means on the full moon day when the vrata was completed after 1 month. This was mentioned in the fifth verse. These unmarried gopis also invited Radha and others who were objects of Krishna's love and could help fulfill their wishes. After completing the worship, the unmarried gopis sported with them in the water, as bathing is part of the yajna rites. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Early in the morning, gopis used to go to the bank of the Jamuna to take a bath. They would assemble together and, holding one another's hands, loudly sing of the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. It is an old system among Indian girls and women that when they take a bath in the river, they place their garments on the bank and dip into the water completely naked. The portion of the river where the girls and women bathe was strictly prohibited to any male, and this is still the system. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing the minds of the unmarried young girls, blessed them with their desired objective. They had prayed for Krishna to become their husband, and Krishna wanted to fulfill their desires. So in this, the rule is that bathing like this, the girls can bathe naked, the boys can't. They have to wear a gumsha or something like that. Especially grihasthas, they're actually supposed to wear two pieces of cloth. A gumsha and then one tied around the waist, technically, because of the religious aspect of the bath. Right? But for the girls, then no. So it's not a problem. Jiva Goswami writes, they rose at dawn by calling each other's names, or they rose at dawn with their associates. They shared their love for Krishna, and thus they held hands. Absorbed in him, they sang his name loudly, since they were fixed on that alone, as if that word gave them consciousness. Daily they went to take bath. Though this was difficult, they did it daily, showing that they were fixed on him. This is the special nature of Anuraga. This is described throughout the chapter. Yeah. So that being fixed or focused just on Krishna, then that's the special aspect. Verses 8 to 28. Krishna steals the gopis' clothes. Right? So this means they're fixed being on that. They're so fixed on Krishna that even though it's difficult, they do it anyway because they want to please Krishna. Sukadev Goswami continued, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and master of all masters of mystic yoga, was aware that what the gopis were doing, and thus he went there surrounded by his young companions to award the gopis the perfection of their endeavor. Right? The master of all masters of mystic yoga. Right? So what was Katyayani? So she was referred to as?
Yogini.
Great yogi, right?
Mahayogi.
Supreme energy, supreme control of the material world, supreme mystic power. But he's the master of the supreme mystics of mystic power. So then that means, so he knows because she knows. So he knows. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Krishna is he who is worshipped by those who have attained perfections like omniscience. He is also naturally endowed with all powers like omniscience as Bhagavan. Thus he knew their vow was dedicated to him. This could be inferred also from their songs about him. His name indicates his attractions to their sweet actions filled with prema for him. It also shows his power to bestow all results. More than worship of devatas, by stealing their clothes at the same time. Okay. This was because he was Krishna, famous for such qualities, right? So you worship the demigods, then they, maybe you can get a result. But here, Krishna, then by worship, they're worshiping him, and by his stealing the clothes, then they already got the benediction they're looking for, right? So it's otherwise you would do to get a benediction that'll come later. By him stealing the clothes, the benediction is already obtained. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, Krishna was surrounded by friends who were younger boys. This is understood from other sources. These boys were about 2 or 3 years old. They could not distinguish between men and women, and they went about naked, right? So there's not a problem, right? They're just small, small, young, because all these guys would hang out with Krishna, right? So then there's the ones that were the same age, but then there's the ones that are younger. So younger means right down to this. They could walk and move around and all that, and you know, like that. They could not separate themselves from Krishna even while he went out herding the cows. Kramadipika says he was surrounded by babies who spoke in broken language, who wore tiger claws around their necks, and who were bound with jingling bells around the waist and had fat thighs. Right, so you're standing. You know they're young when this is, you know, we're talking about how they're dressed. Right? The Vaishnava Toshani, quoting from Gautamiya Tantra, lists the names of the boys: Dama, Sudama, Vasudama, Kinkini, and Pushpaka. They were the very personification of Krishna's heart. So in this, they were they're the main ones in this kind of group. Sukadev Goswami continued. You have to remember, as Krishna also at this time is 7. Right? So, yeah. Taking the girl's garments, he quickly climbed to the top of a kadamba tree. Then, as he laughed loudly, and his companions also laughed, he addressed the girls jokingly, because they'll think it's funny. You steal the clothes, it's just some game, it's some fun. So the Krishna's laughing, they're laughing, it's all some fun, right? Because if he just laughs, then it's one thing, but they're all laughing, then it even makes it more intense, right? Right? And if he goes himself, then he's with somebody, it's, you know, has more of an entrance, more of a thing. If he just goes along and steals off, then that's another thing. So you can see it just adds to the fullness of the pastime. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The small boys laughed without reason, right? They don't know. They just laugh because Krishna's laughing, so they just laugh. Someone laughs, they just laugh. They don't know why. It's just fun to laugh. Right? Krishna laughed loudly, prahasan, calling their attention to himself. He joked with the young girls, right? So by laughing, so this is a nice laugh, then they all get attention, right? We always have, you know, the demons always have to do their laugh to get attention also, but it's not a nice laugh, right? Right? So you can tell the difference between the two laughs, because if you're, how you say, writing it down, you know, annotating the laugh, then the regular laugh is, you know, H-A-H-A, like that, but... but if it's the demons laughing, you have to put M-U-W-A, then H-A-H-A-H-A. That's how you tell the difference. Right? Okay. Oh, young girls of Braja, do you know who has put all of these clothes on the branch of the kadamba tree? I was herding the cows, and from far off I saw them and thought, today the kadamba tree is very colorful with flowers and fruit. To see this astonishing spectacle, I came running here and climbed this tree. The young girl said, those are our clothes. Because right? he's trying to make it, he has nothing, doesn't know anything about it, right? Krishna said, that cannot be. If they were yours, how did they get up in this high branch of the tree, right? Because theirs would be down on the ground. The answer, you have stolen them and put them there. Krishna replied, are you blaming me? I am the son of King Nanda. Am I a thief? I can guess that today you want to go to Kamsa in Mathura. Because right? That's always the threat, because he being the king, then anything to do with punishment will be brought before the king. The young girl said, don't get angry. Just look closely at the clothing and see if they are women's or men's clothing. Krishna said, according to my intelligence, because these are so colorful, they must be women's clothing. But so what? In this universe, you are not the only women. Are there no other women? So it's just whatever is said, you just take it and twist it. Right? So this is chala. So for rasa, chala is nice. Right? But if you're actually trying to establish siddhanta, then chala is an annoyance, unless you're using it to move it from something improper to what's proper. Mm-hmm. You just take it, twist the word, bring it to what's proper, then chala gets used. Because the point is, if it doesn't end in siddhanta, then all these chala, jalpa, and all these different things like that then are a distraction from actual understanding the truth. But if they're used to deviate someone who doesn't understand the truth, and is arguing against the truth, and bring them around to understand the truth, then they're useful. Does that make sense? So, like in logic, something can work one way and not another. Like you can have fire without smoke, but you can't have smoke without fire. So, in other words, if these techniques are used to establish the actual Siddhanta given by the Acharyas, then it's all right. But if they're not used in that way, then they're a disturbance. Right? Then it just becomes argument. They said, that is so, but who else except us can come to this isolated forest? Krishna said, O girls who like to wander in lonely places, are you the only women that wander in lonely places and play secretly? They said, O fool, we did not come here to play. We came here to worship Durga, the deity of this Kadamba tree. Krishna said, are you the only young women worshipping Durga? Are there no others? The young girl said, there are no others. Krishna said, O foolish ones, every night the Deva women come on celestial vehicles and perform worship of Durga here. The girl said, even if they did perform worship here, why would they leave their clothing here and go away? Krishna said, O young girls, you do not know anything. Tonight they will come again and perform worship. After bathing, they will don these clothes. That is why they set them aside here. The girl said, you do not know the truth. Today we will perform worship. The deity of the forest has placed those clothes high up in the tree for us to wear after bathing. Lord Krishna said, my dear girls, right, so the whole thing is just to interact. It doesn't have to mean anything. It's just because the actual purpose is the interaction between them. Right? So there's affection between them, that being expressed, that's actually what's going on. So we see it doesn't actually have to make any sense. Right? You know, parental rasa, it means all of them. The more affection there is, the less it has to make sense. The more there's friends, like you have friends, they can just goof and laugh about everything. And it works fine. You know, it doesn't have to actually be doing anything specific. Right? It just has to be expressing the relationship. Does that make sense? Yeah. Lord Krishna said, my dear girls, you may each come here as you wish and take back your garments. I'm telling you the truth and I'm not joking with you. Since I see your fatigue from executing severe vows, I have never before spoken a lie. And these boys know it. Right? You know, his 3-year-olds are his, you know. Therefore, O slender-waisted girls, please come forward, either one by one or all together, and pick out your clothes. Seeing how Krishna was joking with them, the gopis became fully immersed in love for him. And as they glanced at each other, they began to laugh and joke among themselves, even in their embarrassment. But still they did not come out of the water. Right? Like that. So, they appreciated it, but it still doesn't mean shyness is not going to be there. And whatever he says, they're going to oppose. And so he presents arguments that you can oppose. Right? You know, that's the fun. You bring up something that doesn't. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The gopis said, because you are a liar, we don't believe your promise. Right? Because everything he said up to now had nothing to do with reality. Right? And so therefore he's a liar, so how can we trust that if we come out to get the clothes, you'll give us the clothes? Right? Krishna then answered, biting his tongue, I have never told any lies. From birth till now, I have not had any occasion to lie. What is the proof? These young boys are the witness. They are reliable as witnesses because they naturally report whatever they see. Right? Little kids, like you saw, the little kids would just say whatever they saw. They naturally report. Now, how they view it, however they see it, is how they're going to report it. But whatever they see, they'll report. So he's saying in that way, they're good. Right? But if you're dealing in a court of law, then they won't be taken seriously because they may be able to see some factors, but actually what was going on. It's just like, I remember as a kid, right, the dog at my grandfather's house was huge. It was a monster dog. And then it wasn't, I think, it wasn't until after becoming a devotee. Then, you know, because we have a tendency to look at dogs in a slightly different light. Then I was noticing a dog and, I think, a little kid. And then I realized, that's why I thought the dogs are so big, because they come up to your shoulder, you know, like that. But it's not that the dog's that big, you know. Or I was talking with, who was it? I think it was Niranjan Mark. About how if you visit where you're from, where you grew up, you know, you think it's a big place, and then you go back there, little dinky roads, little dinky houses, everything's small, and you think, what's going on? It was so big. You know? I mean, it was a whole scene, right? Crossing the street to go to the other side to play at someone else's house. You have to look this way, that way, and then run, you know? It's a little dinky street. You know? So he's using that one aspect that they do tell, but it's not reliable. It's not given in the Vedas. It's not given as, you know, they can be witnesses for children, right? Like that. Okay. The gopi said, "From far, time to stop." Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda ki.